Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Friday, December 8, 2023. The United Nations Security Council sets preconditions for reviewing the arms embargo imposed on South Sudan.
Benchmarks also include progress on DDR. That requires allocation of resources. It includes managing existing arms and ammunition stockpiles. And we know there are plenty of weapons in this country.
And officials in Upper Nile State report a surge in gender-based violence against women and girls.
I received 3 cases from the humanitarians. Those are the rape cases, but it's a secret for them. And we are just following the referral now up to national level. Now we have economic crisis.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says the U.N. Security Council has set preconditions for review of the U.N. arms embargo imposed on South Sudan, including the deployment of unified forces and management of existing stockpiles of arms. Charlton Doke reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking Thursday at the 33rd plenary of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, the body tasked with monitoring implementation of the 2018 peace agreement, Information Minister Michael McQuay called for the lifting of the arms embargo.
We have been calling upon you here and calling upon the regional organizations and the international community to press on the Security Council to lift the arms embargo so that we arm these people in order to enable them their functions.
But at the same event, U.S. Ambassador South Sudan Michael J. Adler said the U.N. Security Council has established 5 benchmarks for the review and potential modification of the embargo.
This includes formation, redeployment, and resource allocation to the necessary unified forces, something far more than the mere fraction of personnel we understand have been deployed of the Phase 1 graduates, and certainly requiring movement on Phase 2.
In May, South Sudan approved 3.67 billion South Sudan pounds for the deployment of necessary unified forces who graduated in Phase 1. The revitalized peace deal requires the parties to train, graduate, and deploy 83,000 unified forces to take charge of security during the transitional period until the country holds elections. So far, the government has graduated 53,000 forces. McQuay says the government has deployed hundreds of those who graduated in Phase 1.
Deployed now, and some of them have already reached their destinations. Some left yesterday, others are there. Phase 2 is now being prepared to enter the training center, to go to the cantonment sites and go to the training center.
Ambassador Adler says the country's parties should learn a lesson from Sudan's conflict between 2 military commanders who have been fighting since mid-April for control of the country.
If you did not understand on April 14th why this country needs a single military, a single police force, with single chains of command, you ought to have understood it on April 15th. And if there is failure here, it will be the failure of all parties participating in this agreement.
Adler says the benchmarks also include progress on DDR, or disarmament, demobilization and reintegration of former fighters as stipulated in the agreement.
Benchmarks also include progress on DDR. That requires allocation of resources. It includes managing existing arms and ammunition stockpiles. And we know there are plenty of weapons in this country. It includes completion of the strategic defense and security review process, as well as the joint action plan on SGBV.
In 2018, the UN Security Council approved Resolution 2428, which imposed an arms embargo on South Sudan. In May, the Council decided to renew the embargo until May 31, 2024, on measures that direct all member states to prevent the direct or indirect supply, sale or transfer of arms to the territory of South Sudan. The resolution was approved by 10 votes in favor and 5 abstentions. Amnesty International called the extension welcome news for millions of civilians who have suffered human rights violations by people with guns, including horrific cases of rape and other sexual violence. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Authorities in Upper Nile are reporting a jump in cases of gender-based violence in Malakal, the capital of Upper Nile State. A state ministry official attributes the increase in abuse against women and girls to conflict and culture, among other things. Mamer Abraham Court reports for VOA from Malakal.
Atong Duat's husband was killed in Maban County of Upper Nile State in 2015. The mother of 6 children says just a year after her husband died, she was forced to marry her deceased husband's cousin and has produced 3 children with him. Aside from failing to provide for her first 3 children, Duat says the man repeatedly beats her whenever she asks for support.
When I ask him to support my children, he gets angry. If he sets rules and I do not follow, and I have some obstacle that prevented me from following them, he takes it for granted. If he hears something from the neighbors and I explain it differently, this is always the cause of fighting between us.
Duat says, now whenever her abusive husband starts a quarrel or insults her, she just keeps quiet to avoid trouble.
Now if he is angry, I keep quiet and run away until the time his temper will cool down. If he is wrong and I try to point out the fault, it causes a fight between us. I have now stopped asking him anything. If I get something, I try by all means to fulfill my child's needs.
Duat says, by keeping quiet, she avoids being beaten but feels depressed. Tut Poich Luag, Deputy Director at the Department of Gender in the Upper Nile State Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, attributes the increase in abuse against women and girls to economic hardships, conflict, and culture, among other factors.
I received 3 cases from the humanitarians. Those are the rape cases, but it's a secret for them. And we are just following the referral now up to national level. Now we have economic crisis. Since South Sudan has been in war in 2013, the situation up to date was not there before. But now people are very hungry.
But he says victims should report cases to authorities so they can receive the necessary support.
If such cases are happened in the areas, you need to report to the local authority, because if something is happening to you at home, you need to come to the office or to the organization or to the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare to claim your right. Because whenever you are just peeling fence at home and you did not inform the people, you will be in danger.
Kamisa Jonah Wall, the manager of the Gender-Based Violence Unit at the International Medical Corps, or IMC in Malakal, confirms GBV cases have increased this year due to the influx of returnees from Sudan. Awol says the IMC provides support to rape survivors in Malakal.
We are providing psychosocial support activities and case management and respond to emergency. Actually, the number cannot be provided. It's the UNFPA to provide the GBV level.
Awo urges communities in Upper Nile State to respect women and girls. She advises women to move in groups and avoid isolated places where they could be at risk of being physically or sexually assaulted. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwart in Malakal.
The World Health Organization warns Sudan's health and humanitarian crisis is deepening among ongoing fighting, mass displacement, and disease outbreaks. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Since rival military leaders plunged Sudan into conflict in mid-April, the country's Ministry of Health reports more than 12,000 people have been killed and over 33,000 injured. Additionally, the World Health Organization says Sudan is facing the world's largest displacement crisis. It reports nearly 6.8 million people have fled their homes, seeking safety in Sudan or in neighboring countries. The WHO representative in Sudan, Mohammed Taufik Mashal, says this mass population movement increases people's vulnerability to diseases, malnutrition, gender-based violence, and acute mental health distress. Speaking to journalists from Port Sudan, he says efforts are underway to contain the spread of recent outbreaks of cholera, measles, and dengue.
We are working with the federal and state ministries of health, with other UN agencies, with our implementing partners, in order to sustain essential, most needed, and life-saving health services to the most needy people of Sudan. They need these services now more than ever.
WHO reports aid delivery to some parts of Sudan, especially in the capital Khartoum and in Darfur, is very difficult because of the violence as Sudan's army and the rival Rapid Support Forces militia battle for control of the country. Mashal says the situation in Darfur is of particular concern. He notes many hospitals are inaccessible and insecurity prevents humanitarian aid from being safely delivered. He says 43% of Sudan's population is at risk of food insecurity. Also, 3.2 million children under 5 reportedly are acutely malnourished, including 700,000 who are severely acutely malnourished, a condition that can lead to death if not treated.
700,000 of them are severely acute malnourished with medical complications which require hospitalization and hospital care too. So that is why WHO activated 20 stabilization centers across the states, WHO providing medicine over there, as well as operational support to these stabilization centers.
Mashal says lack of international support is making it increasingly more difficult for WHO to provide essential health care to the millions in need. He says only $9 million of WHO's $98 million health emergency response plan has been received. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we have some listener comments lined up for you. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands. That is craft work, making the baskets and doing more of the clay artwork.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Global Witness, an international organization focusing on human and environmental rights abuses, this week said French oil company TotalEnergies has used coercive tactics and intimidation against communities affected by the $5 billion East Africa crude oil pipeline project in Tanzania and Uganda. Residents along the 1,443-kilometer pipeline route say they are forced to accept low compensation agreements for their land. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
According to human and environmental rights organization Global Witness, French oil company TotalEnergies collaborated with Tanzania and Ugandan authorities to suppress efforts by communities seeking compensation for land taken from an oil pipeline from Tanzania's port city of Tanga to Lake Albert in Uganda. TotalEnergies has denied the allegations and Global Witness has called for an official investigation into the matter. Neither country has commented on the report, but previous criticism, including that from Human Rights Watch and court cases against the displacement and abuses, has not stopped or affected the project, which began this year. Hanna Hindstrom, a senior investigator in the Global Witness Land and Environmental Defender campaign, told VOA that TotalEnergies is directly involved in human rights violations and is benefiting from the authoritarian political environment in these countries.
We found evidence suggesting that TotalEnergies, through its subsidiary, its contractors and partners, has been party to intimidation and bullying of community members affected by the project. Many people we spoke to say they were pressured into accepting compensation for their land and their property that they felt was too low as a result of a climate of fear in both countries. Our report suggests that Total is profiting from authoritarian political spaces in both Uganda and Tanzania because environmental defenders there are finding it all but impossible to speak up against fossil fuel development.
Global Witness say it spoke to activists, experts, journalists and more than 200 people affected by the multi-billion dollar project. 51-year-old farmer Jealousy Mugisha is one of many people who say they are losing their land to pave the way for the pipeline. The father of seven told VOA he lost his land twice, first in 2017, when more than a dozen hectares was given to a processing oil plant used as oil collection point. He then lost 2.5 hectares that were in the pipeline route in 2019. He refused any compensation offered to him, saying it was not enough.
Our target is not that we want to sabotage a government program or oil project program, but also we need them to respect our rights. We are fighting for our rights, and we know the issue concerning oil and gas. With the experience of the across the country, like Nigeria, where people, their land was taken, now they are suffering. So we don't want that thing also to be as for Uganda. But we need to get fair compensation and adequate compensation and preemptive compensation. That is the only thing we are claiming.
According to the East African Crude Pipeline Oil Project, in the first phase of the land acquisition, the landowners were allowed to continue to use their land. In the end, the owner's compensation was calculated with disturbance allowance and an increase to reflect the time elapsed since the original surveys. The landowners say they were allowed to plant seasonal agricultural produce such as corn and sweet potatoes. Some landowners filed a case challenging the eviction and low compensation both in local court and a French court. TotalEnergies has denied allegations they have intimidated anyone affected by the project. The oil firm says it has instituted numerous support mechanisms to ensure that those affected only sign these agreements of their own free will and that their concerns are treated with utmost seriousness. Maxwell Atuhura is the head of Tasha Research Institute in Uganda and an environmental activist who came under attack for challenging the oil project.
My field office was closed, you know, and given 2 hours to leave the place, to leave my own district, my own area. But here, the security man working for oil companies, it's telling me that I'm giving you few hours to leave the district. Where do you want me to go? That is what I'm saying. And since then, they started trading me my phone. My phone surveilled. I started seeing the experience of my houses being broken into. You go out, you find the house is broken into.
80% of the project will be in Tanzania, with the rest in Uganda. Global Witness says the oil pipeline, for which construction began this year after years of delay, will cut across wildlife habitats, protected areas, and indigenous land. The pipeline project, say Tanzania and Uganda regulators, have approved the environmental and societal impacts, and the project seeks to avoid populated and environmentally sensitive areas. Global Witness calls on both countries to protect land and human rights defenders. The international organization is also calling on TotalEnergies to adopt a zero-tolerance approach to reprisals against and intimidation of those fighting for their land and their supporters. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
And now it's time for our listener comment segment. We heard from many of you this week about news and events we covered on this broadcast. First, we have these voice messages.
I'm Mr. Manas Gaboya Ogoli from Miambio, South Sudan. I also want to add my voice to Voice of America today for this day, the 1st December 2023, which is normal commemorated as the World AIDS Day. I want also to urge South Sudanese not to shy away from stigma about HIV and AIDS, because once you talk or speak in the public, it saves life. Therefore, today we need to take this chance also to educate our people, not to sideline people who are with the HIV virus. The stigma must be not our problem to isolate our families or one of our friends from the family. They are part of us, and this is only what we have it, but it's not what we inherit it. Therefore, we need to encourage our families, our friends who are living with the HIV and AIDS, to be part of us and to also take antivirus so that they save life. Thank you.
Hi, Daybreak Africa. This is James Roy Majok from United States, Bantu Town, South Sudan. I'm appealing to Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about the people who are in Gaza that are trafficked without having water, food, medication. Let peace prevail between Israel and Palestinians, and let these two countries allow cessation of humanitarian for those who are in need of humanitarian assistance in Gaza. Thanks.
Hello, BOA Africa. This is Mala Dama in Seattle, Washington. Happy 16 days of activism. With current situation in South Sudan, some humanitarian agencies have tried their best to mitigate the level of gender-based violence in the country through trainings, and the government of South Sudan should take the lead in prioritizing the rule of law that can guide everyone in the country. Thank you.
Isaac Tang Dak in Bantu Town says, I am back after 10 months. Happy to tell you that the whole of South Sudan is battling hunger, and only criminals are causing havoc because it is what they choose to do. Thanks for your time. Mal Adaw Mal in Seattle, Washington writes, Hello, Nabil. Please allow me to congratulate the Honorable Minister of General Education in South Sudan for having tried her best in mitigating exam malpractices. Every wealthy and powerful country emanates from its education system. Our government should know their students are being rejected by some universities within East Africa due to an unscrupulous system of education. Monluaka Juaj Milek in Juba says, hello, VOA. I am Monluak in Juba. My recommendation about the issue of the dollar rate in South Sudan, I recommend to the government of South Sudan, especially the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning, Minister of Labor, Minister of Public Services, that all private sectors like NGOs and oil companies staff should receive their salaries in the local currency, SSP. Also, the people who are sending money outside the country should send local currency. And people who are sending money from foreign countries into South Sudan should receive it in the local currency. Let the central bank bring a stamp to stamp any dollar plus different currencies entered into the Central Bank of South Sudan to circulate in the country. This process is to decrease the rate of the dollar, and this policy is to recover our economics or our economy, because everything like goods is increased in the market because of the dollar. Mading Malwal Alwong in Juba says, we went to school with an intention of changing our community and the nation. It is absurd and heartbreaking to see some people who went to school and still come back and practice gender-based violence in our society. Especially we, the Nilotic nationalities, are the ones perpetrating this. As we are still campaigning against these practices in the eve of 16 days of activism, let's put an end to these dangerous practices that are hindering our civilization. Saber Isaac Khamis, currently in Nairobi, Kenya, says the decision of the UN Security Council to close down the interim UN mission in Sudan at this crucial moment is a sign that the international community is trying to isolate the innocent people of Sudan who are dying and being displaced daily. The solution is not what is happening, and I challenge the move and urge the international community to show their solidarity with the African countries at war now and before. Thanks. And finally, Thorn Mamur Market in Juba writes, dear John Tanza and Nabil Biagio, I thank the lawmaker in the Transition National Legislative Assembly who raised concerns on the issue of the rampant construction of fuel stations in the residential areas in Juba town. It poses a great risk to the lives of citizens and their properties. The City Council should stop approving such activities immediately. Thanks. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming. And that's all we have for you this Friday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Mama Land Sudan. We've been listening to Mama Land Sudan. I am your host, Nabil Biagio in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Gwen Uden, and engineer, Pete Huntley, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Have a lovely weekend, and remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.